From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Ed Morin with the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, April 26, 2019.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Red Zone Wireless, providing a local alternative for broadband throughout Maine. Learn more at redzonewireless.com.
The legislature is considering a handful of bills that would allow sports betting in Maine. Lawmakers heard broad support at a public hearing today before the Veterans and Legal Affairs Committee. Mel Leary reports.
About a year ago, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down a law that banned betting on sporting events, which prompted several states to pass laws that regulate and tax the industry. Representatives from the state's existing casino and off-track betting facilities testified for one or more of the five bills before the committee, as did representatives of the state's tribes. But Milton Champion, executive director of the Gambling Control Board, cautioned the panel that sports betting will probably not make a lot of money for betting operators or for the state. The committee is expected to combine the five bills into one for the full legislature to consider. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Maine's political parties could ditch their presidential caucuses next year if a bill establishing a primary system is passed by the state legislature. Democrats and Republicans have used a caucus system to select presidential nominees since 2004. But frustration during the 2016 presidential caucuses has spurred an effort to retry the state's brief experiment with presidential primaries that were held in 1996 and 2000. Democratic State Senator Louis Lucchini is sponsoring the bill, which would hold primaries in early March if there's a contest for the nomination. Lucchini's bill would allow party-affiliated voters to participate, and Maine's same-day voter registration law allows voters to change or enroll in a party on Election Day. Cost is an issue. The Secretary of State estimated in 2017 that holding a presidential primary would cost about $1 million, with municipalities absorbing about 90%. 36 other states hold primaries, which often drive up voter turnout. Maine is among 14 states with a caucus system, which is considered to encourage more intense voter participation. In the weather, heavy rain tonight, which ends early tomorrow in the south. Elsewhere, it will taper to showers. Democratic Governor Janet Mills has signed into law a bill that will change the Columbus Day holiday to Indigenous Peoples Day. Maine now joins seven other states that adopted similar changes to celebrate the second Tuesday in October by replacing Christopher Columbus and honoring the Native North Americans victimized during and after the Italian explorers' expeditions. And Mills, who has had a rocky past with Maine's Native tribes, says she is moving quickly to restore a tribal state commission, an intergovernmental body created nearly 40 years ago but largely neglected in recent years. Steve Missler has our story.
The bill signing ceremony in the governor's cabinet room was short, but designed to highlight what Mills says is a long overdue historical correction. The governor cited the quote, "History is written by the victors," which is often attributed to former Britain Prime Minister Winston Churchill, as he summoned his country's jingoistic response to Nazi Germany attacks during World War II. Mills says the quote may have also been true of Columbus Day, a federal holiday since 1937, but she says the victors' history omitted the plight of the Native people, and that it was time to join the growing number of states and communities who have since come to recognize it.
I believe we're stronger when we acknowledge and recognize where we may have erred. I believe we're stronger when we seek a fuller and deeper understanding of our history. I believe we're stronger when we lift up the voices of those who have been harmed and marginalized in the past, because there is power in a name and in who we choose to honor.
Replacing Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day was a long-awaited reckoning for the tribal representatives who flanked the governor as she signed the bill into law. Similar bills have failed several different times before, as individual lawmakers sought to enshrine an idea introduced in the late 1970s at a United Nations conference in Switzerland. But this proposal, sponsored by Portland Democrats Ben Collings and Rachel Talbot Ross, arguably had momentum its predecessors didn't. For starters, the bill and its counterparts in other states was introduced at the time of heightened awareness about the struggles of Native Americans. And those struggles, manifested in 2016 at protests over a South Dakota gas pipeline, have become increasingly embraced by Democrats and aligned activists. Democrats, who control the Maine legislature, were easily persuaded by arguments made by former Penobscot Nation Chief Barry Dana, who testified during a February public hearing that changing the holiday wasn't about political correctness, but simply respecting Native Americans.
It's still very much an attack in your spirit when you celebrate a man who really is the poster child for 500 years of genocide.
The change to Indigenous Peoples Day reminded Dana of a meeting more than 20 years ago between members of the Maine Indian Tribal State Commission and former Governor Angus King, who was now a U.S. Senator. King asked Tribal Commission members for ideas to help improve tribal relations with the state.
And the one that I added was to get rid of Columbus Day and make it a Native celebration and a holiday. I didn't have the wording at the time, Indigenous Peoples Day, but someone else did, and here we are today.
Dana no longer sits on the Tribal Commission, which was created shortly after the Maine Indian Land Claim Settlement of 1980. In fact, the 13-member commission hasn't been full since 2013, as tensions between the state and the tribes have escalated over disputes about tribal fishing and water quality rights. Mills, the former attorney general, was often at the center of those legal disputes, frequently drawing the ire of the state's Native American people. But since becoming governor, Mills has attempted to repair the relationship, speaking out against the use of Native American mascots and picking Penobscot Tribal Council member Donna Loring to join her administration. And shortly after signing the bill, Mills reiterated her goal of revitalizing the Tribal Commission, or MTSC.
I'd rather communicate than litigate. Put it that way, and I think that MTSC could be a good forum for communication.
MTSC can discuss issues and make recommendations, but it has no authority to change laws. But Mills believes change can come if the commission is fully operational. She says she has 6 nominations to make. Each is subject to confirmation hearings and approval by the Maine Senate. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Some lawmakers and advocates want the Maine Department of Health and Human Services to establish voluntary certification for recovery residences. The residences are supposed to provide a safe place for people to stay while recovering from addiction. But Democratic State Senator Shanna Bellows says a lack of regulation has led to tragedy in some states.
Overdose deaths in Florida, New York, Pennsylvania were attributed to living situations that were billed as recovery residences, to whom families and individuals paid a premium, but turned out to be unsafe and exploitative.
Bellows is sponsoring the bill that would create a voluntary certification program and a subsidy for people who want to reside in certified residences. A similar measure passed last year, but never received funding. Within a few years, Maine's lobstermen will have to remove half of their trap rope from the water. That's just one of the recommendations agreed on today by a broad group of stakeholders tasked with choosing measures to protect the endangered North Atlantic right whale from entanglement with fishing gear. Fred Bever has more.
Representatives from 14 Atlantic Coast states participated in the 4-day consensus-building project, including fishermen, scientists, state regulators, and conservation groups. The stakes were highest for Maine's lobster industry, which landed $484 million worth of the crustaceans last year, the most valuable single-species fishery in the nation.
The recommendations put forward here today are a big ask.
Patrick Kelleher is commissioner of Maine's Department of Marine Resources. He says if federal fisheries managers adopt the recommendations, Maine's lobster industry will take a severe economic hit.
We're in the northeast corner of the country, and much of our coastline is incredibly poor, and there's not a lot of other options. It's much different than the rest of New England. We have to recognize that.
And one lobsterman from Steuben, Michael Sargent, agreed that there would be rough waters ahead. But he also helped push the group to consensus by saying he would find a way through.
When I reduce 50% of my vertical lines, in my boat alone, I am going to remove 10.78 miles of vertical line. So that has implications on my fishing ability in places, but it and it's scary for me, but I know that's something, and I can go back to my fishery and explain to my other fishermen, this is something we can do.
The recommendations include an exemption for young fishermen and for nearshore and shallow waters. Other measures that will now be considered in a 2-year federal rulemaking process include using weaker rope or weak links that whales can easily break through, and more rigorous gear marking requirements to help identify which gear whales are most often contending with. Overall, all the states agreed to reduce risk of significant injury or mortality for whales by 60%, with each agreeing to reach that goal through a combination of strategies. Maine officials and lobstermen had pressed for more time before deciding on the recommendations, saying the federal government provided inadequate and poorly vetted data and models for determining the most effective methods of reducing risk for the whales. But at today's meeting, Patrice McCarron, executive director of the Maine Lobstermen's Association, said National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration officials held firm to their goals and timeline.
The agency's been extraordinarily stern about the goalpost and the fact that it's happening with or without us. And we took that to heart, and, you know, it's black and white, it's rope. It's not going to be there anymore, and I'd like you to just think about the fact that that's incontrovertible benefit to the whales.
There are fewer than 420 North Atlantic right whales left in the world, and federal scientists say that entanglements are the leading cause of injury and death. The stakes were accentuated this week when news filtered in that two right whales had been spotted in waters off Cape Cod, entangled in fishing gear. Many at the meeting said today's decisions would be the biggest step yet taken to protect the species.
Really powerful and could help the situation tremendously.
Amy Knowlton is a whale researcher at the New England Aquarium.
I think it's a huge move forward for the U.S. industry to be taking on some of the measures they're going to be putting into place. You know, to get 50% end line reduction throughout, you know, especially up in Maine where gear densities are so high.
The recommendations were endorsed by most of the conservation organizations in the group, even as they continue to advocate more aggressive action, such as seasonal fishery closures when whales are likely to be present, or wholesale removal of rope from the water. Sharon Young, the Marine Species Field Director for the Humane Society of the United States, was the lone dissenter to the consensus vote endorsing the recommendations.
And the ultimate solution is for whales not to be encountering things that will kill them. And the photograph that we saw of the animal that they tried to rescue in Cape Cod Bay yesterday, it has lime through its mouth, over its head, down the body, and trailing to a trap. This plan would not have prevented that from happening. And what we need to do is stop that.
And the environmental groups warned that they would press forward with lawsuits under the Endangered Species Act, which they hope will force the federal government to quickly enact more protective measures for the right whales. Back in Maine, meanwhile, DMR Commissioner Kelleher says his next task will be to deliver the news to the lobster industry and begin work on ways to meet the new regulatory reality. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever in Providence, Rhode Island.
Maine Family Planning has withdrawn its request to block what it calls the Trump administration's gag rule on abortion. In a press release, Maine Family Planning says a nationwide injunction issued Thursday by a federal judge in Washington eliminates the need for additional relief. Earlier this week, the nonprofit argued in federal district court in Bangor that the new rule violates patient and provider rights. The rule applies to the Title X federal grant program, which helps low-income patients access family planning services. Under the new requirements, clinics would have to erect complete physical and financial separation between abortion and other services they provide. It would also prohibit providers from making referrals for abortions. The Maine Department of Health and Human Services announced today that it has discontinued the use of photos on electronic benefit transfer, or EBT, cards for the Supplemental Food Assistance Program. The department says the policy was ineffective and threatened eligible Mainers' access to assistance. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Have a great weekend. I'm Ed Moritz.